Good morning. If you are visiting with us, we are very glad that you are our guest today. We hope that this worship has been uplifting to you so far. If it's your first time here, what you've seen is kind of what you get. This is who we are. We announce things that some of you care about and some of you don't. We spend sometimes more time than others doing that. We pray, we sing together. We gather around the table for communion, and you listen to me for a little while, and that's kind of what we do. And there's some other things we'll do we'll talk about here in just a second. See if the PowerPoint, oh, it's cooperating this week, I'm excited. First of all, I want to remind you all of our men's breakfast. One of the other things we do around here is we like to eat, which you will witness in a little while. We have cooked plenty. We have been preparing for this week for a few weeks now, so if you are visiting and feel awkward about taking food, don't. We are happy to offer food up your way. We also talked about in Bible class this morning ceremonial cleansing, which I'm assuming everyone did before preparing that food, so you're all good. All good to go with good food today. This Saturday, we're having a men's breakfast, which area churches are getting together on, and we're going to have a time of breakfast and fellowship. This past Friday evening, as Roy mentioned, we had table games. The game of my table was Paul and Carl and Leland and myself drinking coffee and telling stories. That was our game, and I don't know who won, but I think we all did. But we like to have a good time together, and we'll be doing that this Saturday with our men's breakfast. And then at the total other end of the spectrum, coming up on November 2nd, is Orphan Sunday. And I don't know about you, but I hear from time to time in our world religion getting a bad name. And I hear a lot of people talk about how bad religion is and how negative religion is. And I'm reminded in James verse 1 and chapter 1 and verse 27 that religion that our God our Father accepts as pure and faultless as this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted from the world. Now, that doesn't sound all that negative to me, the idea of taking care of folks that need to be taken care of and trying to keep ourselves from being polluted by the things around us. And that's what we'll be centering in on November 2nd. Orphan Sunday is a time where we can think a little more about those in the world who are without parents and have an opportunity to do something about that. We're very closely aligned with a group called the Christian Relief Fund. If you'd like to learn more about them, you can Google them and see their website. If you get to the place with lots of orange, you're in the right place. And they will tell you all about what they do and how they do it. And we will also have the opportunity, if you'd like to adopt a child, not to live in your home, but still living somewhere in another place that you can financially support, there are opportunities to do that. If you'd like more information about that, Cindy Hoffman is kind of our point person on that, and she can tell you all about the organization. There are also some of these brochures in the back that you can pick up and look at and learn more about what they do. Which brings us to today. Blessed, or if you come from the King James Day, blessed. I don't know how we started pronouncing it that way along the way, but blessed. If you'd like to turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. We'll begin in verse 1. Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and he sat down. What a great idea. Except for someone in the rows right there that would have no idea what I'm doing up here. I love this part of how Jesus teaches. The fact that he just sits down and the crowds gather around and they want to hear more of what he has to say. He came up on this mountainside, he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." This word blessed is one that we've taken and run with, I think, in our culture. And there are a lot of ways that we can interpret this, but to try and get back to what Matthew was writing and what Jesus was saying here, it combines a lot of English words. One of them I think we would probably agree with quite a bit is happy. When we think of being blessed, we think of happiness. We think, you know, in terms of blessings, when we count our blessings, there are things that we are happy about, things that have made our lives better. Another piece of this word is good. And this is where we probably get off course a little bit nowadays, because when we think blessings, we generally think of things that are good. We think of things that are positive. We think of things that make our lives easier or better. And another piece of this word that we have in Greek is the best good. And so as we see these things that are going throughout chapter 5, and we think of being blessed, I want you to think of things where our attitude is one that is happy, which, by the way, if you've not centered in on this idea yet, is something you have control over. And I know in our culture today, that's not a popular idea. We think that things either make us happy or make us sad, and that's just kind of how it is. You have some control over what your attitude is going to be. You have some control over whether when something comes your way that is not what you anticipated and not something that you view as positive, as to whether you're going to feel blessed about that or cursed by that. And so Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Now, I don't know what you think of when you think poor in spirit. And when Luke goes through these same Beatitudes, Luke just says poor. And so I imagine we could very much look at poor around us every day. I know as I drive around, I see folks quite a bit with signs, like you guys do, who are downtrodden and down on their luck and need help. I see folks that are just in need, that are not blessed, if we want to look at the American use of the word, the way that I am. Even if we did not have the potluck today, there would be no danger of me not finding lunch this afternoon. I'd find it somehow, and it would be there, and it'd be okay. For so many in our world, for folks like these children that we're going to talk about in November, that's not an assumed thing. It's not always known where that next meal is going to come from. And then when Matthew adds, in spirit, I want you to think of those times where people are just empty and down. And even if you have not been poor along the way, maybe you have felt poor in spirit somewhere along the way. When things are just not what you want them to be, when things are going in the wrong direction, when things are difficult, when you just feel emptied of your energy, you feel sapped, you think to yourself, what else could possibly go wrong? And Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And if you're reading ahead here, you might notice right away that the kingdom of heaven is going to pop up here at the beginning of this and again at the end of this. And I don't know about you, but when I think poor or poor in spirit, I don't think kingdom along with that. When I think kingdom, I think of a picture I saw this week of Queen Elizabeth. Queen Elizabeth was greeting someone, and they were dressed in their best, and they were doing the curtsy and all that stuff, and she was in this great, giant, grand palace. When I think kingdom, I think of big palaces and walls and fortifications and not poor. And we're going to see very quickly here in these Beatitudes what Jesus is going to do throughout the Sermon on the Mount in chapters 5 through 7, which is he's going to take everything that we think is so and turn it upside down. He's going to take everything that we think should operate in a certain way, and everything suddenly is going to become the opposite of what we think, which if we could do in our world sometime, would sound like a great idea. What if everyone who was rich suddenly was poor? What if everyone who was poor suddenly was rich? What would everyone do? How different would things be for us? What if the things that we strive for to be successful in our world's eye, what if they suddenly were not the things that were important and just being genuine was the thing that was looked at as a positive? What if just being pure was the thing that was looked at as a positive? And Jesus is going to show us here in chapter 5 that these things are the opposite of the way that we have thought of them. So blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And then we see, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And again, if we think of blessed as happy, then this is totally the opposite of what we think. People who mourn are not generally happy. Now, you will have moments where there are happy memories and happy times. I remember the first time I had to sit through one of those viewings at a funeral home as a member of the family. My grandfather had died, and I sat in this room for 2 hours as people came through, like a lot of us would, I think, searching for words, searching for what is the thing to say. And I will tell you from that experience as an 18-year-old sitting in that room, some of them were good at it, some of them were not. And some of them said exactly the wrong thing. I've always been reminded in times like that of Job. If you know the story of Job, who went through a lot. Initially, Job's friends, when they showed up, they were just there. And then somewhere along the way, they decided to open their mouths and talk. And everything went downhill very quickly. And I realized that night as I sat there, sometimes just being there is what we do. But when I looked around and I think of mourning, I don't think of happy times. I don't think if this is something that we look forward to. I don't think if this is something that we really like to do very much. And yet Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Now, I will tell you, if you're visiting with us, that there are a lot of folks out there that feel like Christianity would be great if it were not for the church. There are a lot of people that think that the things that Jesus wants us to do, they all sound like really good ideas, but man, these people, they get in the way and they mess it up, and we do sometimes. But this is one of those places where we will begin to see the value of church. Because when people mourn, we do comforting pretty well. Now, like Job's friends, we will occasionally say a dumb thing, and that's what we do. But a lot of times, we are just there to help and to comfort. And I did find in the time that I sat there for that 2 hours in the funeral home that when church folks came through, I found comfort. I found comfort in their understanding. And as Jesus says that those who mourn will find comforting, and he looks out at these disciples of his, think of what he knows they're going to go through just a few years down the road, of mourning him, of the confusion of what's just happened as he dies there on the cross, and the comfort that they will find in each other. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Now, meek is not a word we use a lot nowadays. And I think a lot of times we will automatically in our minds go to something like weak. And it's this point where we need to stop and be reminded who Jesus is. Jesus is a carpenter. Now, I think of many things when I think carpenter, but weak is not one of them. Carpenters are usually tough, strong guys. Jesus is not weak. We read in Scripture about Jesus coming into the temple and flipping over tables. Not the nice little white plastic top tables that we have nowadays, by the way, but big, heavy tables, I will imagine. And Jesus comes in and turns these tables. Jesus is not a weak man, but when we think meek, let's start to think instead gentle, humble. Then it doesn't quite sound as weak. It sounds maybe a little more self-controlled. That it's power that is under control. And Jesus said, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. When are we gentle and humble? When do we exercise self-control? We start to see in each of these Beatitudes that Jesus says, something that we should be. And I will tell you, if the church were being these things that we will look at here today, I don't know that religion would have such a bad name today. I don't know that people would look at Christianity and say, Christianity sounds great, if it were just not for those people, just not for the church. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Now, righteousness also is not a word that we use a whole lot today, but I'll tell you one that we do that has a very similar meaning, and that is justice. We want justice. Now, we all have a different idea of what that is and what it looks like, but justice is something that we can get behind. And think of it in that way. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice. Now, we don't do, I think, a whole lot of hungering and thirsting. We probably have our moments where there's a busy day and we get to about 3 o'clock and realize we skipped lunch and didn't mean to. There are times where we get somewhere and the bottle of water has run out, but it's not too hard to get to the next bottle of water. But what do you just genuinely yearn for? What do you yearn for? And I like to think that changes over the course of time, but I don't know that it does. I told you a couple weeks ago that we had put the Target toy catalog in front of our kids one year when they were small and said, circle here what you want so mom and dad will know what to buy. And when we got it back, everything was circled. We wanted it all. And I like to think that that goes away over time, but I'm not really sure that it does for all of us. Sometimes there are still a lot of things that we want, and the things just get bigger and more expensive and harder to attain. But there's a lot of stuff that we get caught up with. But Jesus here is talking about hungering and thirsting for righteousness, hungering and thirsting for justice. And do we want justice and righteousness at the level that we are hungering and thirsting for it? When I did youth ministry, for 4 years, we took our youth group to Colorado, drove 20 hours in a church bus, which is exciting all of itself. Finally got to Colorado, got out, got all this equipment. We were going to climb a 14,000-foot mountain. Now, it's more of a hike. We're not on there with ropes and carabiners and all that stuff. But we're going to hike this 14,000-foot mountain. In the first year I went, I knew my limitations well enough to know that I was horribly out of shape at that point in life. And so I drove the bus and got them there. And one of the dads, who was in much better condition than me, hiked up the mountain with them and came back down. When they got to the bottom of the mountain, after having hiked up and seen the summit, the tallest summit in Colorado, they came back down. I stopped by Safeway on the way to pick them up, and I got 2 dozen donuts and a whole lot of juice. And when I got there to where they were to come down off the mountain, and I took out of the bus these donuts and juice, I saw hungering and thirsting like I had never seen before. I imagine people coming out of a desert in need of water. They had had mountain food. All they could eat for the week was what they could carry up in these packs. And suddenly they saw donuts and juice, and it was on. They were just excited about life. They were very happy to see me, more than I'd ever seen them before. And it was a great moment. And I thought about Matthew 5. And I thought, when have I hungered and thirsted for things of God to that level? When have I had that level of excitement about God's stuff? And I don't know that I do nearly as much as I should. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. I like receiving mercy. I'm not always as good at showing mercy. When I was in college, I was the student that if you're a professor, you were not very excited about having in your class. It's kind of there sometimes, not sometimes. Sometimes I'd be enthused about the topic if it was something I really liked. Other times I would just be putting in time. Ironically, I married a professor, which is just funny to me. And sometimes she will talk about something that's happened with a student, and I will think to myself, oh, if you only knew. I would have been the one that you hated, and it would have really frustrated you a lot. And I would have come at some point seeking out your mercy. The last fall that I was in Searcy, I got to teach a freshman Bible class at Harding. I was on the other side of it, which was just bizarre to me. And I realized when students came in, I started to realize that guy's me. He's the way I did this. And it was much harder on the other side to give out mercy. Do we not find ourselves that same way? There are so many times that we want the patience from somebody else. We want the mercy from somebody else, the understanding from somebody else, that we are just not always quick to give out ourselves. How many times do we get frustrated with our spouse for doing the same thing we did yesterday? How many times do we get frustrated with a coworker for doing the same thing that we did last week? And from them, we desire mercy and understanding and compassion, and yet from ourselves, we don't give that out nearly as often. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Now, people are split on what this one means, and I'm sure there are probably lots of other opinions too. But the main thoughts are either single-mindedness, pure in heart looked at that way, or pure in heart in looking at it from a morality kind of standpoint. Now, I'm going to guess, instead of splitting hairs a lot of times biblically, we'd probably be better off just looking at both of those, as they kind of go hand in hand, don't they? When we get a little more single-minded of being godly people, don't we by our very nature become a little bit moral in the process? These are people whose heart is pure, because don't we read later in Scripture that out of the overabundance of the heart, the mouth speaks? Those things that we say don't just come out of nowhere. It's what's on our minds, what's on our heart that comes out. And so blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. We need to be pure about who we are. We need to be a little more what you see is what you get with how we live. And Jesus encourages that kind of honesty here. And then blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Now this is a long forgotten trait, it seems like. Peacemakers. Thinking again in terms of kingdom, which we're going to get to again in the next one, we think of attaining things by taking from someone else. We think of attaining things through war. We think of attaining things through conquest. And then Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. Maybe it isn't enough just to not fight. Maybe it isn't enough to just get out of the way of those who do. Maybe sometimes we need to step in and be peacemakers. Maybe sometimes we need to step in and bring calm to a situation. I have in my day, this is the part where I have to be careful because this is recorded, and I found out that some people that I know that don't live here listen sometimes. But I have, in doing ministry full-time for about 15 years now, been in a lot of meetings. That's what we do. I don't know why, but we have meetings about things. And sometimes those meetings are very smooth, and sometimes they're not. The ones here, by the way, have been very smooth. I'm talking about other people now. Sometimes people disagree. And if you know people, people disagree in lots of different ways. And I have seen very godly people look a little less godly at times as they disagree. And I have watched people raise their voices. I have watched people occasionally get a little red in the face. Surely I was never one of these people, but, you know, hypothetically. I've seen people disagree in some ways, and then I always think of this guy, Don, who taught me what a peacemaker is. Because even when he disagreed, or disagreed with anybody who was getting a little loud or red in the face or anything else, he was a voice of calm. And he would walk into a situation, and when he would begin to speak, everyone else slowed down. Everyone else stopped for a minute, and they thought about what it was that Don had to say. And Don had this way of diffusing the situation. And I will tell you, there are not nearly enough Dons out there in our world today. Don, who is actually Don, I didn't fake the name to protect the innocent, Don passed away a few weeks ago. And I thought of the great loss of somebody like Don because he is a peacemaker. And a lot of us, I think, have that ability and just don't use it because it's hard. But Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Sons of God sounds like something that we want to battle for and attain and reach out and grab. And yet Jesus says this comes through not war, but making peace. And then blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, when I'm persecuted, I don't feel very blessed. I don't feel very happy. I don't feel very excited. I feel downtrodden. I feel like I need to let everyone know I'm being persecuted and this is not right. And yet Jesus says, blessed are you who are persecuted because theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Not through conquest, but through being persecuted. Now, I'll also share with you very quickly that persecuted, when Jesus talks about it, probably not quite what we think of nowadays. We tend to, as Christians, sometimes feel a little persecuted about things, and I get it. I know there are times that our world is not kind to us. I know that there are times where you feel like it's hard to say what it is we want to say. But none of us are getting dragged out of here and taken into an arena full of lions today. None of us are going to be burned at the stake today. None of us are going to be put on a cross because of what we believe. But persecutions come. And in different parts of the world, even today, a lot of those kinds of things happen. And Jesus says, blessed are those who are persecuted, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And then he shifts gears a little bit with his pronouns. In verse 11, when he says, blessed are you, when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you. Now, I would think, blessed are you. Things are going well. Blessed are you when that money comes from nowhere that you were not expected. Blessed are you when your kids do the right thing for the first time in a long time. Blessed are you when that annoying neighbor is kind to you today. Blessed are you when that guy at work who never does anything is working hard all day. Blessed are you when your boss notices what you did. Blessed are you when you find the money on the street and no one claims it and now it's yours. We would think a big list of blessed are you when this thing happens. Blessed are you when like me, you go to the coast on Friday. Finally, we got over to the coast since we moved here, and we saw whales while we were there. And it was very exciting and very neat, and I felt blessed at that moment. Because I buy in too. I look at the times that things are going well and find the blessings there. And then Jesus instead says, blessed are you when people insult you. I've been insulted a lot in my day. This will come as a shock to you. In junior high, I was the fat kid. I don't know how that happened, but somehow. And I can remember days being just brutal. I can remember days going into school and just not wanting to be there. I can remember a day, we lived a half mile from my school. There was a day I went to a baseball game and my bicycle had a flat tire, so I borrowed my grandfather's, which if you've ever seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Pee-wee Herman had a big red bike with white wall tires. That was my grandpa's bike. And I rode my grandpa's bike up to the school to watch the baseball game. As I turned into the parking lot, I saw one of those guys that was just brutal to me all the time, and I just wanted to turn the bike the other way because I knew what was coming. Didn't feel blessed when I was being insulted. I didn't feel blessed when being persecuted, however you want to look at that. I didn't feel blessed when people falsely said evil against me. And people lie about us sometimes, don't they? And we don't feel blessed right away. But then Jesus adds the really important part here, because of me. When people do all these things because of him, because we are pure in heart, because we're being peacemakers, because we are being meek, if we live all these things out, sometimes people are not going to accept it the way that we would like for them to. And Jesus says, you are blessed because of that. Rejoice and be glad. And these are not the times that we think of rejoicing, but Jesus says, rejoice and be glad, because when those things happen, and if you're doing it purely, and if you're doing it being meek and gentle and humble, then you're doing it right. I've heard it said before, if nobody disagrees with you, you might not be doing it right. When you are living this out, people are not going to know what to do with it, and you might be misunderstood. And people might insult you, and people might say things about you. And Jesus says, rejoice and be glad, not because it's fun, not because you enjoy every day like that, but because great is your reward in heaven. Great is your reward. Larry said to us during the communion time that God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. As we're going through all these things and you wonder, how can we be happy? How can we be excited about all this? How can we find any kind of joy in it? It's because of that. It's because we know that what we're here for is not just tomorrow or the next day or how work is going to be or what things are like at home, but great is your reward in heaven. There is something so much greater that we are a part of as members of this church. This morning, if you're visiting with us, I know this was a lot, and it's a lot to jam all of that into one sermon. But I hope there's been something here that has been uplifting and encouraging to you. I hope maybe you understand a little more about what we're about. And I hope that you will come back and listen some more and sing with us some more and pray with us some more and let us get to know you, because if there's one thing that we understand, it's that we have a great reward coming. This morning, if you would like to become a member of the church, if you would like to take on Christ, or if there's something in your life that we can pray about, however we can help you, come as we stand and sing.